okay, this is the type of person that we want to be. This is their habits. These are their actions. Are we doing them or not? And then if we're not, then we can objectively say we are not doing enough. Alex Hormozi talks a lot about this too. He says, you're going to learn the information one way or another. You're either going to pay with money or you're going to pay with time. And time is money.
Right.
So you're always paying with money. He says, if somebody has a $50,000 a year salary, it's costing them $950,000 not to know how to make $1 million every year.
They're at this point now, but what did their journey like when they were where I am?
Mm-hmm.
When they were...
That was good grammar.
That worked? Okay.
Sure, man. Jake speak good.
I think it's one of the main key points that you kind of have to work through, you know, if you want to succeed at an above average level. When you commit to something, at least to yourself, you know that you're going to follow through with it and mm-hmm. that you can follow through with it.
Keeping those promises to myself, no matter how hard they are to follow through on, gives me so much more confidence in my ability to actually believe myself when I say I'm going to do something. I try to be as transparent as possible and yeah. kind of show again what I wish I would have watched
mm-hmm.
when I was just first starting out, knowing that, hey, you don't have to know everything.
Yeah.
Because I don't, but here's how I'm still trying to. So
absolutely. Welcome back to another episode of the Humanizing Success podcast. Today, we are joined by James Harden. No, not the James Harden you think. He does look a little different than usual.
We're related, so, actually.
Yeah, probably. But today we're in Miami, Florida. I actually just moved here. That's a little bit of the reason that I had such a break in the posting. So I apologize for that, other than the fact that I made other excuses. So that's my bad. But today we're with James Harden, and James and I are new friends. We actually met at a real estate investing meetup hosted by Pace Morby. Shout out Pace. I know you're not watching this. You're cool.
You might.
Who knows? But yeah, so today we have the pleasure of speaking with James Harden here. James, I was hoping that first you could tell us a little bit kind of what you got going on in your life right now. And yeah, what do you do?
Okay. Well, thanks for having me on, man.
Of course.
No, it's funny. I knew kind of like within like the first like 5 minutes of meeting you, we kind of just like went like super basics on our life stories, and we're like, hey, we're pretty similar.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy.
So no, I saw a lot of myself in you, so that was cool. I mean, kind of just grinding the real estate game right now, you know, just one of those people that have been, it just, real estate like has this allure to it, to where it draws people in, they see so much opportunity, and then it gets you fired up. And then you get out there and you realize, hey, this is going to take a lot of work.
Right. It's not as simple or clear cut maybe as it seemed.
Yeah. So I'm finally at the point of my real estate career where I've actually had to overcome that hurdle of the inaction phase and just like the mentally stimulating through tons of information and actually getting to work. So that's where I'm at right now. And it was took a lot to overcome that.
I feel like that phase is in different ways, obviously, but takes place in kind of any sort of real business or something you're going to pursue. You know, you're unsure. You're like, wait, I don't really know what I'm doing. But, you know, you're not always going to know. You're probably not going to know what you're doing until you've been through the reps and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But so what part of are you a realtor?
Just to yes. About... I'm a real estate agent, okay. The James Ruff Group, small private firm. And then when I first started, it was just working with buyers, trying to get them into homes, and then trying to just build network out and see if I can get a couple listings.
Yeah. Yeah. Makes sense. So the first topic that I speak about with people here and that I find very interesting in the different answers I get is, when you picture success, what comes to mind?
I knew this question was going to be asked. So thankfully, I did prepare a little bit for this.
Okay.
And I'm glad I did, because my definition actually changed. Because
as you thought about it?
I was writing about it. I like to give myself like little prompts and write about them.
Yeah.
So when I was writing about this, I kind of boiled it down to what I think is the healthiest, most impactful definition of success for myself. And that's keeping promises that I've made to myself.
So you might not believe me, but before we watched this podcast earlier today, I was going through TikTok, as you do, and I came upon a video by someone who was literally talking about the process of success being proving that you can trust yourself
and making
small victories and small, like, okay, I said I'm going to do this.
Yeah, you're building rapport with yourself.
Which is crazy. Yeah, continue on.
No, exactly what you're talking about. Like, I've probably heard similar people talk about this type of thing, but it's like when you're constantly letting yourself down and not doing the things that you say you're going to do, whether that's on a micro level, like, oh, I'm going to get up at this time, I'm going to do this activity.
Right.
And then you wake up late, you don't end up doing that. You literally just smack yourself across the face and say, I don't respect myself enough to actually get this activity done.
Right.
And it kind of just has it can have a snowball effect from what I've noticed.
So what is the first thing you need? Like, how can you hold yourself accountable there? Because I almost feel like sometimes I've had things where I said I wanted to do or whatever. I didn't write them down. I didn't actually plan it. And so when I didn't do it, I was like, well, it was just a thought or whatever. So what do you think the first step in creating those smaller successes is?
Like those little habits, building those habits. I mean, it's kind of just realizing that it's not going to happen if you don't. And it's almost like you have to, well, for me, I don't know what the first step should be. I don't think there is like a first step necessarily.
Well, I guess how have you gone about it is the better question, because that's all we care about.
Well, I just completely deflated.
Okay, and what does that mean?
I let it take me all the way down to like the bottom almost. So when I first started doing real estate, I completely quit the job that I was at working here.
Okay.
And then saved up enough money to just say, hey, I'm going to be a full-time real estate agent. Didn't know what that looked like. Just figured I'd be able to figure it out. Because I've been able to figure out a lot of stuff in my life, just kind of winging it.
Yeah.
And so got my license. Got hooked up with a great broker. Thankfully, that was the one thing I did right, was actually get a great mentor. And then I just kind of did what I did my whole academic career and just procrastinated, thinking that
it'll just come.
Yeah, something's going to fall into my lap. You know, I'm a real estate agent. Real estate is going to transpire.
Right. Isn't that funny?
Yeah, right. And so I totally had just a realization that, oh, shoot, I'm on my own now. There's nothing holding me accountable.
Right.
And
was this the first job, by the way, that you didn't have like a hours or like it was on you?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's the first time in my life where I was totally outside an environment that held me accountable.
Right.
Because, I mean, you think about it. You grow up, you're going to school, you're held accountable by your teachers. You don't do your homework, you get punished. You don't do your chores, you get punished. You sign up for a sport because you want to do something, you get punished if you don't do it. You're running laps.
Right.
Whatever the case is at your job, there's always some sort of like consequences immediately.
Right. And also for the school thing, that leaks into your home and your parents find out about it and you get trouble at home.
Exactly.
And they hold you accountable.
So it's like, you're not studying for your tests. You're not going to get this grade. You don't get this grade. Your parents are going to be mad. You're not going to get into college, whatever. Like, it's so immediate, these consequences. But then when you're finally, especially in entrepreneurship, it's free. It's like an open sandbox world out there. I mean, you cannot do something and nothing's going to happen to you. And so that was the first time in my life that I was really actually face to face with myself. Yeah. And I was not up for the challenge.
So we had a conversation the other day, which you just made me think about, where you talked about a lot of people talk about recently delayed gratification, but you were talking about delayed
consequences. Yeah,
consequences,
man.
Yeah.
It just hits you like a truck.
What does that mean exactly? What are delayed consequences?
Well, kind of contrary to delayed gratification, everybody talks about the glory of, okay, hey, you're going to put in the work now. You're not going to see results. It's going to come later. It's going to be this magical thing, right? Yeah. Delayed consequences, on the other hand, in my opinion, they pose no immediate threat and they just sneak up on you months or years later, to the point where after enough period of inaction, they just you're like in your own head and you're thinking, hey, I'm still in the same position I was 5 years ago, or it doesn't even have to be that long. It'd be a couple months, a year, you know, you're just like, damn, I didn't do anything. And I could have been, if I had actually put in all the work in this time period, I could have been here.
Right.
But now I'm not. And now I feel like crap.
And we were talking about depending on where you are in life and what you have at that point, how old you are and things like that. Sometimes it can be too late in that laziness or whatever that kept you from, or excuses or whatever it was that kept you from, you know, seeing that reality beforehand. Can sometimes, you know, time is not something we necessarily get back. So,
But I think that time that you're in that pain almost plays into the fact that you know what the other side of the fence is going to be. And you know that you don't want to go back to that.
So another topic, which sometimes when things get brought up, I like to jump into it. So another topic I was going to talk about was failures with you. Failure is motivation. They kind of play into each other. For yourself, and we've had different conversations about where motivation comes from and, you know, how you maintain it and things like that. There's been other people like Alex Hormozi who talks about kind of drawing motivation mainly from being frustrated with where you are.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like it can be drawn from both sides, like the positive or like building like encouragement for yourself? And
yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of things that can trigger motivation. There was this one study, I forgot where it came from, but they showed that the fear of loss is actually more powerful than the opportunity of gain.
Yeah, I saw that, I think.
And people will try to do everything they can to avoid losing something.
So backwards.
I know, right? And so, because I mean, the whole idea behind like manifestation is to think about all the things that you want in your life.
Yeah.
But the real emotional driver is when you're thinking about all the things you don't want in your life.
Right.
So it's like it's a balancing act between thinking, okay, this is where I can end up if I don't do this.
Right. And not letting that fear consume you.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Because fear-based decisions are kind of, they usually lead to unfortunate events.
Which in my case, I haven't really made that many fear-based decisions.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. It just, when moving to Florida, just kind of happened out of nowhere. Like I got my elbow surgery and then the doctor was like, yo, what are you going to do? Are you going to stay here and do the rehab?
Yeah.
Or are you going to go back to California and figure it out? And I was like, I'll stay here. And he's like, you got a job? I was like, I'll get a job. He's like, you got an apartment? And I'm like, I'll find something.
That's
like,
great.
So
I just had that feeling like, I'm going to figure it. Like, I'll be able to figure it out.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. I feel I almost wish I had a little more of that survival instinct, because I think that I would have been a little more motivated to actually follow through on some of the promises that I made to myself.
What if you had to choose a couple of the promises that maybe you haven't fulfilled for yourself right now? What would those be?
They would be making more phone calls.
Okay.
And it would actually be being more consistent with the things that I know this is broad, but it could be anything, because usually I'll hop around between a couple of them. Like I'll be like, oh, I'm going to tell myself I'm going to do this tomorrow, and then it'll change to that. I wish I could just stack them better.
Does that mean being able to manage your time better, or what does that look like?
Yeah, it does. Managing my time better, I would say. Yeah, because I get easily hyper-focused on things. Like when I start doing something, I don't stop doing something.
Yeah.
Like for instance, when I first moved here, I was building a bed frame. And from sun up to like almost sundown, like I didn't eat anything, barely drank water.
What is this bed frame? Like a trapeze.
No, so I saw something cool on like Pinterest or something.
Okay.
And I was like, oh, that would be dope. I want to make this. And so I just went to Home Depot.
You were making it yourself?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that makes so much more sense. I thought you like bought a pre-made one and you're just having so much trouble putting the pieces together.
Yeah, no, I'm not an IKEA. Unfortunately, what's it called? I grew up in a house where my mom was very crafty.
Cool.
Very handy. Same with my dad. they were both in the fields of just like hammer and nails kind of deal. And so it just came naturally for me to just start building stuff as well. And so whether it was anything we needed at all, my mom was always like, oh, we can make that.
I like that.
And it's fun, but it's also like now I'm kind of like outside of that. I feel like
sure
I could spend my time doing more productive things. And I almost feel guilty if I want to start doing something like that. But
so on the topic of feeling guilty about maybe doing something that you do enjoy, I think that especially in the phase that I've been in where I like you, I feel guilty when I'm not necessarily, maybe I'm doing something that's productive. Like it's not necessarily watching TV or something, but doing
like cleaning the
being
house.
Curious about, right. Or cleaning the house or being curious about some other side project or whatever. Mm-hmm. I really enjoy those things, but they aren't necessarily associated with my immediate goal.
Mm-hmm.
But so I've struggled with how important is still maintaining like, you know, things you're actually passionate about and
the balance between
right, them. Exactly. And so do you think it's still important to incorporate those things in your life? And how do you?
I think I you can gauge it kind of by how far along you are in your journey. So like, for instance, if you've been working hard and you're proud of yourself.
Yeah.
Then, yeah, I mean, like, it's going to feel a lot better to actually do something that you enjoy than if you've been being a nincompoop and not doing anything. And then you're like, okay, now I'm going to do something I enjoy when you really hate, you don't deserve to almost at that point. It's like, is it going to feel better after a hard day's work or after you've been like lollygagging around?
Yeah. So I think I struggle with negative self-talk in the way that if that day I didn't do something or didn't do everything that I wanted to do,
mm-hmm.
I'd be like, you totally wasted the day. And
yeah.
But then that leads into other like negative talk and whatever. So I don't know the balance of don't let yourself get away with those things versus don't hang on to those things for too long. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I mean, what if you just treated yourself like you were your own son and you were like, hey, man, like probably should have done this today. It's all right, you know? And then if you keep messing up, you're going to be like, all right, dude, we're going to have a talk.
Do you have conversations with yourself?
Not really. No. I kind of just like, I either write everything in my notepad on my phone or just like drive with the radio off and just kind of like.
That's scary for a lot of people.
What?
Driving with the radio off, being with their own thoughts.
It's hard.
Most people don't do that.
It's. I don't know. It's just more, it's like a therapy almost.
I agree.
And that's why I like to write, because it's like, I think differently. I think almost like more, I feel like analytically when I'm like writing things down, like sometimes I'll like write something. I'm like, oh damn, that was kind of cool. And then it's at the same time, it's almost like a therapy to where you're not necessarily having that bias of, or not that bias, but you don't have that fear of being judged by another person.
Right.
And it does take skill to be honest with yourself, but
that's for sure.
At least, true, yeah. You know, it's going to be easier to be honest with yourself than maybe another person. And yeah. You're the only person who actually knows your own story.
Yeah, I think being honest with yourself is a huge, huge step that not only is important to initially take, but mm-hmm. like, even as we're in the place maybe we are now, you know, we have a tendency to lie to ourselves and say like, yeah. Oh, I can get, like, that'll be whatever, like, whatever it may be. But being able to step back in the moment and be like, no, that's not true, or this is actually the reality or whatever, mm-hmm. Is a skill for sure.
Do you feel like you also sometimes gaslight yourself when people ask what you're doing and you're telling them all the things that you say that to yourself that you should be doing, and then you almost feel that reward of doing it because you're like, oh yeah, this is what I do.
So you know what's funny is there's been times, by the way, I think that was the first question I've ever been asked on the podcast, so congratulations.
Oh really?
Yeah, I think so. I don't remember exactly, but I don't remember being asked the question, so
okay, well I got a lot more
it.
So
yes, but the funny thing is sometimes I'll tell people like the things that I'm doing or the things that I'm attempting to do and know I'm not 100% all the time, but I'll tell them what I've actually done and in pursuit of what I'm trying to do. And they'll be like, dude, you're doing so much or whatever. So like, it's all about perspective, but then again, it depends on the person who's saying that or the people you're asking. Cause if the people you're who's saying like, oh, that's so much, if they don't have what you want to have or, you know, the life that you are pursuing, then maybe it's, you know, maybe that's valid. Like they, for them, that's a lot. So I don't know how much to reward myself or to say like, dude, like I'm like to myself, like I'm proud of you. You know, I see the effort you've put in, even when I always feel like I can do more, which is a good thing, I think.
Yeah.
But as long as it's not bashing on myself.
Yeah. No, so, I mean, I get told that I'm doing a lot as well and that I'm too hard on myself. So similar, but at the same time, to your point, we both know kind of, okay, this is the type of person that we want to be. This is their habits. These are their actions.
Right.
Are we doing them or not? And then if we're not, then we can objectively say we are not doing enough.
It really is that simple.
Yeah. So, and not to say you have to be some robot and just like go off and grind set. We grind while you sleep kind of deal. Like if you're putting in a decent amount of effort and you're seeing no results, then you're either got to change the type of effort you're putting in or you got to do more.
Yeah.
One or the other. And I would probably opt for doing more first before I change the action, especially if those actions have been repeated by people who are successful in what you're trying to do.
Right.
Then you're either just not getting enough volume or you're not getting enough reps in the that skill set to actually sharpen your
tools. I think something that's very interesting nowadays, we have so much availability to look at people's stories who are successful, what their lives look like, more in depth, like what they're doing on a day-to-day. So,
but they're also ahead of us at that point. So their day-to-days are like not true what you should be doing. And I find that challenging.
I agree with you. So at that point, to that point, it's a little bit more of our responsibility to dig deeper and be like, okay, they're at this point now, but what did their journey like when they were where I am? When they were.
That was good grammar.
That worked? Okay.
Sure, man. Jake speak good.
Yes, exactly. So yeah, we do have a responsibility to not just take it for face value and say, okay, there are probably some going to be some differences in what my life looks like to what theirs is going to be right now, even though they have the life I want to live and I want to maybe do some of the things they're doing on the day to day, but they weren't doing that at my stage. So
yeah, I think another thing is you also see them at their skill level doing these things and you think that you have to come up to that skill level to even start.
Yes. Right. But they, how did they get to that skill level?
Yeah, they just, they fumbled a bunch.
I always forget, but never mind. I was going to, there's some saying that I can't remember right now that goes exactly with that, with what we're saying right now, but that this provided no value the past 20 seconds, what I just said. Anyways, something I want to ask you actually is, and I feel like, so I watch Diary of a CEO podcast a lot. I don't know if you know.
I thought you were going to say Diary of a Wimpy Kid.
Almost. Slightly different.
That was inspiring.
Yeah. So that podcast, he always talks about people's childhood having a lot of effect on who they are today. Do you feel like you can pinpoint things in your childhood that have kind of created the person that we see today?
Yes. And I was thinking about this driving home from when I met you. When you came into that group. So Jake walks into this group. He has his name tag on. It says, Jake Benin, I'm new. I'm like, look at this goober.
Figured I just cut all the BS in the beginning. Bro, I have no idea what's going on. Someone come up to me.
Yeah.
It worked.
And no, I saw myself in you at that point because growing up with my mom, she's like the textbook definition of an extrovert. Like when we'd go to like family parties growing up or just like neighbor parties, we'd just see that my mom would see the neighbors having a party and she would be like, oh, let's go. And we just walk in.
That is so
my
scary
mom would just start chopping it up with people. And I was terrified to do that.
Same.
And so growing up, I remember one of the neighbors just moved into their house next door and all their kids were playing in the yard.
Yeah.
And my mom literally had to give me like a dollar, like $2 to go and play with these kids because I was just like terrified of, like, I wanted to play with them, but I didn't want to actually go approach them. And
yeah.
And I was just terrified of actually encountering them. But she forced me outside my comfort zone every single day. And I'm grateful for that. So I think that has had a big effect on me growing up, because whenever I see somebody new to a situation, whether that would be like a coworker or somebody like you who is walking into the group hoping to get the most out of it, I like want to go up to them and just like make them feel included and welcomed.
I mean, I felt like, you know, when you're one, everyone at that group and everything was super friendly.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I did go up to people, they were super friendly. And I was like, you know, I'm at this event, I'm alone, I have to go up to people. I kind of force myself to be there. But when I walked up to, it was like four or five guys that you guys were talking with. And I was like, you know, we're fairly around the same age-ish, you know, younger, the first half of our lives age. And so it was scary. And I was like, oh, like who? And then all of a sudden you just like made your way around the circle. I was like, is this guy coming over to me? And so it was very nice. I appreciated it. And look where we are now.
Yeah. No, I always wish that somebody would do that to me whenever I'm in a new social situation.
Right.
So I'm like, I'm just going to be, I'm not, it's not even like a choice. I just like naturally just want to do that because I wish somebody would ever do that to me. Yeah.
You wish it was the other way around.
Yeah. I always wish it was the other way around because I hate making introductions.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I appreciate
it. But if I don't do it, nobody's going to. Yeah. So
we talked a little bit about failures and failure, but what do you see? What role do failures play in your life, you think? And how do you look at them?
I think I look at them in two ways. First being, why did you do that?
Okay.
If it is something that I had complete control of.
Okay.
If it's something like if I'm on a cold call and I totally botched it, I'm like, all right, I'm learning now at this point. But if it's to my point of something that I made a promise I was going to do something and I didn't, then I'm like, you piece of shit.
Is that promise to yourself you're saying? Or
yeah, promise to myself.
Okay.
And so I think there are different types of failures, and certain ones are good. And certain ones are inexcusable, but you also learn from them as well.
Right. So that's the other side.
Like,
even if it is a failure, you shouldn't be like accepting of necessarily, you know, there is that other side of, okay, take what I can from it.
Yeah. This is how it feels.
Exactly. And remember that feeling so that I can picture it beforehand. Honestly, that's how I've avoided. And that's how I try to think of a lot of things these days. Like when I'm making an action or making a decision, you know, I'll try to think of especially if it's something like a decision, like let's just say getting a motorcycle now. So I used to have a motorcycle, but now thinking about getting a motorcycle, I think it's one of those things where the gain from it, if you actually think about it, I don't know how it could be worth the risk almost.
Oh, especially in Florida, bro.
No helmets.
You don't want to do that.
Drivers in Miami here.
Oh my God. Insane. It's the biggest collection of the world's worst drivers is here in Florida.
Yeah.
I've never seen so many just blatant traffic violations or accidents. Like I remember when I first got here, I was driving to work and there was like four cars flipped over, just separate occasions. And I'm like, what is going on? I feel like I accidentally stumbled onto like an action movie set.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, where's Optimus Prime? Like, tell him to chill out. I need to get to work.
Yo, the amount of accidents that I've seen, like with the car in front of me, car behind, like right in my area here, like two or three within the first 2 weeks I was here. One time I had this, I'm getting on, so I'm cruising along on the freeway in the fast lane, and this dad on his motorcycle, with his probably 6-7 year old girl, on the back of the motorcycle with her little bicycle helmet on that's falling off, merges onto the freeway, gets into the lane next to me, and then all of a sudden he decides, or he doesn't decide, but he doesn't see me for some reason. I guess I'm in his blind spot. But as a motorcyclist, you're supposed to look and not just look at your mirrors because you have that ability and you don't want to.
And you have a child.
Right, and you have a child, and you have a, you're on a bike that's going to like explode if you hit a car, practically. So he gets over into my lane, or he tries to, and I don't have enough time to like honk or anything, but
yeah,
like
people be bold out here.
It's crazy. It's crazy.
Live fast, die young, brother.
And yeah, right. Exactly. That's the motto. there's bad drivers in Israel, but here it's, and I didn't think you could get on another level because it's pretty bad there. But here is, it's on another level.
Do they drive on the right side of the road?
Is same it, side here as here.
Freeway structure is kind of similar. Or?
Yeah, less lanes usually.
Okay.
Small, everything is a little bit smaller.
Got it.
But yeah, it's especially in Tel Aviv, which is a super compact city, kind of a bit like Miami.
Mm-hmm.
So much more traffic and like just so many people passing through there. So there's always traffic almost. And it's faster getting on a bike.
It's honestly nice to know that other countries have traffic too.
Yes. Yes. Outside of Tel Aviv, very little, but.
Well, have you seen those videos where it's like, I forgot what culture it was, but it's like crisscrossing like mopeds, cars, like and people walking, and they just all like seamlessly merge together.
Yeah, I think it's beautiful. I think it's like India or something.
So
yeah,
beautiful.
It's crazy.
Could never be us.
Absolutely not. Right, especially in like, well, each place has their own struggles, but in California, we practically never see rain. So
yeah,
when it rains, people forget how to drive.
California. We're rude.
Yeah.
In California. I'm from California, by the way.
Yeah.
We're rude drivers, but we're not bad drivers.
Right. I agree.
We can cut you off.
I agree.
We're safe about it. You know, Florida is just like
reckless. Yeah.
I got rear-ended in the rain here.
Really?
Yeah. I was stopped at a red light for probably like 10 seconds, and this girl comes.
I don't know how you can avoid an accident here.
Barreling into me. You, well, for one, do not stop at a yellow light. You better know. It was, I've cut a yellow light close before just because I didn't want to get slammed into. And like, I was this close to probably running it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I've been here a month already. I know somebody's behind me. But I was leading the charge of like four cars. Like, they just did not care. And a school bus.
Oh my gosh.
Like, that thing had kids on it.
I've noticed that. It's not like, okay, yellow, red, everyone stops. It's yellow, red, two or three more cars go, and then everyone stops.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, like, if the light just turned green, wait a second.
Don't go.
Yeah, somebody's going still. No. Hold your horses, sweetheart.
So, another thing I wanted to talk about is surroundings and who you surround yourself with, where you are. What have you noticed? What kind of effect that has on life in general, yourself?
You hear it everywhere. Everyone's like, oh, you're the sum of the five people you hang out with. Your net worth is your network.
Right.
God damn, it's so true. It's so true. And I just always assumed that it wasn't that important.
Yeah.
But I mean, the first 2 years, well, I've only been here 2 years. So the first year I was here and I got my real estate license, I didn't surround myself with anybody in real estate. I just kind of worked with my coworkers and hung out with the people that were in my original vicinity.
Yeah.
And I didn't really go anywhere with real estate.
Is that because you didn't think about it, or why do you think you didn't?
I mean, I just felt, again, awkward reaching out to people.
Right.
And it wasn't until I joined the Sub 2 community and learned about Pace Morby and all of those people that I actually started to branch out and try to get help from people. And it just totally turned my world upside down. I started having conversations with all these people that I watched YouTube videos about. And now all of a sudden, like, I have their phone numbers and like we chat and just like they help me.
Did you want to do it all yourself?
So I didn't learn I didn't even learn how to use a team for the longest time. I always thought you had to do it yourself.
It should be in the basic high school curriculum.
Teamwork. Yeah. Well, I mean,
team building, business, you know.
Yeah, and I heard this one podcast. They were talking about how like they pretty much program you to only work by yourself. Like you have to take the test by yourself, which is, I get it. You know, it's not like they're purposely trying to do that, or maybe they are. I don't know. Yeah. I have my own trust issues with that, but like it's kind of just like you're growing up in a culture to where you have to do everything yourself, and they're not really teaching you too much how to work with a team. I mean, you do have group projects and all, but like, which I think probably group projects were the most valuable lessons that high school probably could have taught for anybody. Sure. But no, it just like having people on your team to pick up and where your strengths aren't. So like, for example, in the real estate business, I have no idea what I'm doing sometimes. I understand the basic concepts.
Yes.
I understand how they're applicable.
Yeah.
And why they're needed.
Yeah.
But if you told me right now, if you had a gun to my head and said, structure this contract.
Right.
RIP. Tell my mom I love her. Like, but what I would do is in that scenario, I would say, okay, great. Let me get you in touch with so-and-so. They're going to handle the next steps from here. And then I'm going to be involved in that process. So with my broker, that's exactly what I do. I have these conversations and I say, let me get you in touch with my broker and we'll walk you through the next steps, or we'll whiteboard this.
Yeah.
I fill him in what's going on and he walks me through everything before we do it. And then when we're doing it, I notice what he's doing. And so now I can get another step further by myself.
Right. So I think progress, I think you can make a bit of progress on your own, but not only will you make more progress, but the speed of the progress increases tenfold when you have other people alongside you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a mentor or mentorship is kind of a cheat code almost, like how useful and important it is.
Oh, totally. Yeah. I mean, Alex Hormozi talks a lot about this too. He says, you're going to learn the information one way or another. You're either going to pay with money or you're going to pay with time. And time is money.
Right.
So you're always paying with money.
That's so true.
And the opportunity cost of not knowing that information as fast as possible is also costing you money.
True.
Like he always talks about, like, he says, if somebody has a $50,000 a year salary, it's costing them $950,000 not to know how to make $1 million every year.
Right.
So
funny to think about.
So when people say like, oh, I can't afford to get into a mentorship or whatever.
Yeah.
It's like you can't afford not to, quite literally, in that example.
Yeah, that's true. What is your take on the risk side of necessarily maybe putting yourself in a little bit of financial trouble in order to get knowledge?
Oh, I maxed out 3 credit cards.
There we go.
On mine, yeah. We're running and gunning out here, man. Yeah. But no, I saw the value.
Okay.
Based upon my own needs, when I actually was trying to buy a place through, so I found this duplex opportunity that was pretty lucrative, and my dad had just got his pension check.
Okay.
And so he got like a decent chunk of change from his pension, and it was just going to sit there. He wasn't going to do anything with it. And so I was like, hey, like, I'm a first-time home buyer. I could do this transaction for you and get you some cash flow. Like, I could live in half of it, rent out the other half for like $2,000. You would be getting $500 a month in cash flow, $6,000 a year. You only have to put 3.5 down. It was a great deal. And so we were structuring this deal, offer got accepted, everything was great. And then we ran into some financing troubles because they live in California and I'm in Florida. We also have to abide by California's niche little laws when it comes to FHA loans.
There's a lot of them.
And so my mom owns a small business.
Okay.
And she had just transferred all of her business debt into her personal name to get a better APR.
Gotcha.
And so in California, your spouse's debt is also tacked on to your debt to income ratio.
Gotcha.
So when they were underwriting us, they noticed that inflated DTI and were like, whoa, 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 hold on. Like, you're not going to qualify for this anymore. And yeah. I was like, what the heck? And they're like, you're going to need an increased down payment. So it ended up going from like 3.5 to, I believe, like around 12% down.
Oh, wow.
Still nothing crazy. It still would have been like a 20% cash on cash return at that rate, which is a pretty decent return on investment. And then they found another problem with the loan, being that my dad wasn't going to live in the house with me as the co-signer. That's also a California thing. So
gotcha.
It just totally fell apart. And I'm like, so that was my first experience trying to buy a house. And it was a nightmare. I had to jump through so many hoops, a bajillion hoops. And I was like, how do people do this? It was so hard. And then I was like, there's got to be another way. Yeah. And that's when I found Pace Morby and just opened up this entire world of possibilities to where you can do almost a limitless amount of things with creative finance if you just think outside the box.
Right.
And you can accomplish pretty much darn well.
Right. There's almost a solution to every.
Yeah. There's pretty much a solution to every objection.
Yeah.
And so that's when I really got excited and passionate about it, because I struggled through this myself and saw that there was such a need for people who own businesses that can't qualify, for people. One of my neighbors, he was in the Army.
Yeah.
And he qualifies for a VA loan, which is one of the best loans you can get.
Right.
Except his wife's income didn't, for whatever reason, they didn't take his wife's income into consideration.
Okay.
So he wasn't able to get the price of the house he wanted. And so he was only able to qualify for houses that they weren't interested in.
Gotcha.
So now they're renting when they could have bought something, and now they're just throwing money down the drain renting.
Yeah.
And so with this creative finance thing, it's like the only limitation is how creative can you be?
Right.
You don't even need your own money sometimes.
Yeah. That blows my mind still. So we could talk about this part that we're getting into for a long time, but
yeah,
I want to reroute.
Somebody mentions real estate and I'm just like,
no, that's good. That's good. So the last question I like to ask is, what are you most proud of in your life so far?
I like that question. I'm actually proud of I'm proud of the self-accountability that I found. It was something that I had worked so hard on, and I kept failing at, and it took me so long to actually build a rapport with myself, because looking back at it, I damaged my relationship with myself a lot because I kept falling through on these promises I would make on myself.
Right.
And just learning to keeping those promises to myself, no matter how hard they are to follow through on, just gives me so much more confidence in my ability to actually believe myself when I say I'm going to do something.
Right. And that's so important if you want to progress.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it's one of the main key points that you kind of have to work through in the beginning of kind of, I guess, finding who you are, mm-hmm. for one. But, you know, if you want to succeed at an above average level, you kind of have to overcome that in some way. And, you know, when you commit to something, at least to yourself, you know that you're going to follow through with it and mm-hmm. that you can follow through with it.
Yeah. And it also, I mean, it has an effect on your relationships as well. I mean,
yeah, true.
People in your life, they see you telling, or well, the people in your life, they hear you saying that you're going to do this and that, and you don't do it. You're now not only a man of your word to yourself, but now people see you as just somebody who
says a lot of things.
Yeah, is all talk, and they won't believe you next time you say that you're going to do something, whether that's for them or for yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so true. It popped up a thing in my head. After high school, there's a lot of, I've always been someone who kind of bounced around, never really committed to something and kind of just tried a whole bunch of things, which I don't think is necessarily a bad thing. Like I'm here because of that. And it does affect me in some way. Like as soon as I start to maybe see success, I think I'm a little bit afraid of success, to be honest, because it implies now you're responsible for continuing that and improving and things like that. Deeper topic. But when I said that I was going to go to the army in Israel and do this whole big thing, I had told one of my buddies and then I went. And so, and then I like FaceTimed him while I was there. He's like, dude, I didn't think you were actually going to do this.
Really?
And it was funny. I was like, yeah, it kind of like clicked for me. Yeah. I was like,
why do you think that is?
That I hadn't followed through before? Or
why do you think that he assumed that you weren't going to do that?
Well, because I had originally said I was going to go to University of Hawaii and study marine biology. And then I lived there for half a year, or not even half a year, 3 months, and then came back. And then I said I was going to get my real estate license at one point, and then I said I was going to go to Moorpark College and finish this major, and I just didn't like it. And so I don't necessarily think I should have finished some of those things because they weren't the direction I wanted to go. But
you're also young at that point.
But I was building up this stigma that, you know, I make these huge decision commitments and then change my mind, which, like I said, I don't think is necessarily a bad thing in all those cases. But I think there is some, I guess, gain to be had from finishing something, even if you don't necessarily, if you realize you're not in love with it in the moment. So I guess getting to a certain point with it.
Yeah, I mean, to that point, it's like you mentioned almost being afraid of success because that means you have to commit to something. It's not the end of the world.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it is scary because now you feel almost obligated to either see this through or be seen as somebody who isn't a man of their word.
Or failed.
Yeah, I think failed is more geared towards your fear of being judged by other people.
True.
I think not doing what you say you're going to do is more of a fear of being, of letting yourself down.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I don't know. But at the end of the day, you can't really take everything too seriously.
Yeah.
I think when we start taking ourselves too seriously, we start getting too in our heads, like everybody's watching our every move and that.
100%. 100%.
It kind of just...
I think mental vacations and like stepping out of your current reality sometimes and getting different perspectives can be so...
Mm-hmm.
So helpful, one, but just necessary at the end of the day. So, yeah, there's nowhere else I was going with that. But we are at the end of our podcast here. And so the last thing I'd like to do is do a word association with you.
Oh, yes.
So I have 5 words that we're going to go over, and you kind of give me your first response, first one word to a couple words maximum response. Okay. Failure.
Macaroni.
Perfect. You really want macaroni, don't you?
The cups look like macaroni.
He thinks these look like macaroni, this purple cup right here.
Hold on, let me close my eyes and do it so I'm not influenced.
Small wins.
Pink? Damn it, I'm thinking about
the cup purple.
Okay. Small wins. Oh, they said small wins.
Ah, small wins.
Okay,
we can keep going. Okay.
Hold on. No, I'm going to answer. Okay. Failure. Now I'm thinking about it.
Yeah.
Okay, let me start with small wins. Important.
Okay.
Failure. More.
More. Gratitude.
Why am I thinking the most basic words? I was like, it's good.
That's fine.
Gratitude. Good. Okay.
You're thinking way too hard, right?
I don't think I'm thinking hard enough. I'm at a first grade vocabulary.
It's reverse thinking too much, not thinking hard enough. Your surroundings.
Fun.
Golf.
Bad.
Like you're bad.
Four.
In golf. Okay, amazing. Thank you, James, for being here today. That's what it says I should tell you. But now we're going to go off script here.
Okay.
Thank you very much for being here. I've thoroughly enjoyed this. I think, honestly, we might want to do our own separate podcast because I think we have very valuable conversations that we've talked about before.
Dude, I was thinking the same thing.
So maybe you'll see the James and the JJ.
The J&J.
J&J
the first
podcast,
J is Jake.
But which, okay, all right. I was just going to say, but then you don't know which is fine. Anyways, thank you so much for being here.
Wait, I want to word associate you now.
Okay, go for it.
Plant.
Red.
Life.
Great.
James.
Funny.
Career.
Complicated.
Success.
I wanted to say also complicated. That was my first thought.
Okay.
So
go again.
Okay. Perspective.
Perspective. Okay. Macaroni.
Classic.
Thanks for having me on today, Jake.
So if people wanted to find you, let's say they live in Florida.
Okay.
They have, you know, they want someone to represent them or they have an interest in real estate. Where can they find you?
Yeah. Instagram, Uncut James. And
you know, I just realized where that's from.
Tell me.
Uncut Gems.
Yeah, but exactly.
I didn't put it together until right when you just said it right now.
Yeah, other people go a different way with that, but
okay.
I think it's a double entendre here.
Yeah, I see the second side. Let's not mention that one.
But yeah, no, I post a lot of my cold calls and me messing up and just kind of just I try to be as transparent as possible and kind of show again what I wish I would have watched when I was just first starting out, knowing that, hey, you don't have to know everything.
Yeah.
Because I don't, but here's how I'm still trying to. So
absolutely. So I'll link his info below and you guys can check him out. Go support him.
Hi, Mom.
But thank you so much for being here. And thank you guys for watching. Please, if you've gotten any value from this at all, like even the slightest bit, very, very small, feel free to like and subscribe and follow us on all the social media platforms, except Twitter. I've never gotten on. I never understood
it's
Twitter
X
really.
Now.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah.
I didn't even know that.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you guys and stay delusional because success comes when you least expect it.
That was fire.
Thanks.